Welcome to The Wrap, a weekly podcast covering women's sports news. Bez, what have we got around the grounds this week?
It is World Cup week in b-ball.
Yeah,
triathlete Ash Gentle wins the US Open and San Diego sell out their new stadium with 32,000 fans.
For our key story, we'll discuss the French Cycling Federation's decision to fly their men business class and their women in economy. Another day in women's sport. My name is Chloe Dalton. I'm an Olympic gold medalist and I play AFLW for the GWS Giants. Every week on the show, I'm joined by my co-host Bez, who works across all things women's rugby, chief researcher and all the operations and logistics at the back end for the Female Athlete Project. Bez had a big wedding weekend, but I think you've recovered now in time for Monday morning wrap recording.
Back in the game. Wasn't so much in the game yesterday.
Round two, you've actually got your notes up on your screen.
Small steps.
Small steps. I'm very excited that it's World Cup week in basketball. We're going to chat about that, but it's in Sydney. It's on home soil. We're going to get there. We were just discussing, surely we're going to get there for Thursday night, the opening game.
Absolutely.
As the Oakers take on
France.
That's going to be a good one.
And it's a doubleheader. I think the game before is Korea and I want to say China, and Tones and I is performing before that as well.
Cool.
Yeah. So if you're in Sydney this Thursday night, it's a public holiday for some reason that I don't want to get into. Very strange. Day off Thursday. Make a day.
Oh, yeah.
Get out to Homebush. Two games and Tones and I.
Public holiday. It's perfect.
Yeah.
Love it. This podcast drops every Tuesday morning at 6 a.m. Hit subscribe so you don't miss an episode. And you can also subscribe to our weekly newsletter of The Wrap that the team works very hard to pull together behind the scenes. Link is in the show notes if you want to get that one in your inbox to read with your morning coffee. Let's take a look around the grounds.
In cycling, the World Road Cycling Championships are here. And the opening event of the event has been raced and won. A lot of events there. Unfortunately, Aussie Grace.
The opening event.
Look, sometimes it's hard to use a thesaurus. The thesaurus. Maybe I haven't recovered from the weekend. Unfortunately, Aussie Grace Brown fell just short of the gold, finishing second in the women's time trial to the defending champion Dutch rider Ellen van Dijk. It was van Dijk's third world title in the discipline. Grace Brown went early in the race, so they all start kind of one at a time, staggered. And she set the time to beat, clocking 44 minutes and 41.33 seconds for the technical 34.2 kilometre course in and around Wollongong. She sat in that number one seat for a long time, waiting for someone to beat her. And it wasn't until the defending champ, who went, I think, second last out of the 45 riders, finally did it. Brown was super happy with her silver medal and spoke about what it meant to ride in front of a home crowd when she said after the race, "I hoped I was in contention for a podium spot here. I think having local crowds and people cheering my name really pushed me along on the course. I'm super happy that I had a good day." So the local human crowds, very welcomed by the riders. little funny story here. The flying locals, not so friendly.
Nobody likes the flying locals.
So it's swooping season, and the Magpies have been getting in on the world champs too. Brown said, leading up to event, "I've been swooped twice already since being here. So it's not just the international athletes that are worried about it. I get pretty scared by Magpies." Belgian rider Remco Evenepoel, who is a favourite for the elite men's road race this week, I think he summed it up when he told Cycling News, "After being swooped during a training ride, it was terrifying, but that's Australia apparently." That's all he said. Terrifying.
Amazing.
He also did go on to say, "I know that local riders around here put little things in their helmets, but the amount of research and money that goes into being aerodynamic at this level doesn't really lend itself to some zip ties at the top of the helmet."
No, it doesn't. I have a traumatic bike riding Magpie swooping. There was a hill. You and I grew up on the same street, actually, not at the same time, but on the same street.
Just keep calling out my age. I'm offended.
This hill that was so steep, and I was going down on my bike, and this Magpie came from the front and just swooped. Do they like bike helmets or something?
No, I just think they don't like bikes.
That's fair.
But that hill, we're lucky to have her, everyone, just quietly. It really could have been the end of Chloe at a young age.
In NRLW, the final round of the regular season was a triple header on Sunday, and there was plenty to play for. Three-time NRLW champions, the Brisbane Broncos knew the equation. So they had to beat the Parramatta Eels or lose by less than 4 points to stay in fourth place and book their spot in the playoffs. But the Eels were just too good for the Broncos, getting the important win 28-16 and taking fourth place from them in the process. It means this is the first final series that the Brisbane team will not feature in. Brisbane captain Ali Brigginshaw was clearly upset after the loss and was at a loss. There's a lot of loss in there. We've got a lot of loss, a lot of events today. She was trying to explain what went wrong in an underwhelming season. She said after the match, disappointing. It's shattering. You train so hard and then you put in performances like that. There were too many moments we didn't show enough desire as a team. It's just disappointing. We feel disappointed for our family and friends at home watching. We tried so hard. We're going to learn from it, but it just hurts.
It was rough. She was visibly upset, Ali. I think probably being part of a team that has been so successful for so long, not a familiar feeling for them to not be playing in finals next week for sure.
At the other end of the emotional spectrum were the Eels, who were looking for their first win of the season. So the victory means they'll play finals footy for the first time in their history. And coach Dean Witters said after the match, "We're definitely really happy with the result. I don't really care that we've only won one game to make finals. If they've done the job, I don't really care. That's just external stuff. We know our performances this season have been worthy of getting another opportunity against these top teams." And I think that sums up probably the length of the season, the number of teams in the competition, and the fact that the Eels have gone close to getting a win. So I think there's been some games where they've been a little bit unlucky just to miss out. So it's kind of a weird format, though, that you can win one game and make finals.
Yeah, well, it's a, you know, 6-team comp, 4-team final series, so.
Good ratios.
Not a bad shot. And also, you know, interestingly, I get that and I understand that that's, you know, that makes sense to me. But next week now you've got 1v4 and 2v3 straight, and then winners of those go straight to the GF. So really, the Roosters have dominated all year. They could run into a red-hot para team and be gone in the first week, not make the granny.
It is a tough format, but I think if you finish first and you can't beat the fourth team come semi-final time, then you don't deserve to win the whole thing.
Yeah, that's brutal from you. Shocking, but I'm here for it.
Shocking. Can you believe it? Following on from your Roosters chat, they had a comprehensive 38-12 win over the Gold Coast Titans. That secured the top spot on the ladder for the defending champs. And in the final match of the day, the Newcastle Knights were too good for the St. George Dragons, winning 30-8. The win meant the Knights, who came last in the 2021 season, finished in second place. Knights prop Caitlin Johnston was huge, running for 194 metres with 16 carries. Next week is week one of the finals, so we'll see the Knights come up against the Dragons in the first semi, while Premiers the Roosters will face the Parramatta Eels, as we said, 1v4 in the second match. The NRLW semi-finals will combine with the Prime Minister's 13 matches for Rugby League's Footy Fest at Suncorp Stadium on Sunday.
Should be a great day. In AFLW, so we dubbed it as a potential grand final preview last week, and the match did not disappoint. The Brisbane Lions and Melbourne Demons put on an epic display of footy on Sunday, arvo. The Ds got off to a red-hot start, kicking the opening 3 goals to about 19-0 after 8 minutes. But Ali Anderson with 21 disposals and Jesse Wardlaw, who kicked 2 goals, were immense and led the Lions fight back, which resulted in a 6-6-42 to 4-3-27 victory. It was Melbourne's first loss of the season and put the Lions on top of the ladder as one of just two unbeaten teams after 4 rounds, along with the second place Western Bulldogs. Collingwood suffered their first loss of the season, going down 2-9-21 to 2-4-16 in some pretty ordinary and wet conditions to the Adelaide Crows. There was some history made in that match when three female field umpires, Eleni T, Gabby Simmons and Jordan Pearson, officiated in the same AFLW fixture for the first ever time. Well done, ladies. And in a weird occurrence, the Blues, Carlton, registered a second straight draw. That's weird.
Hard to even try and get a draw.
Draws are rare in AFL, and to have two in a row is pretty out there. This week it was a comeback against the Freo Dockers that ended 5 goals to 32 each. The Dockers led by 18 points at halftime and seemed certain to bag their first win of the season. But the Blues stormed home after a blitz to open the final quarter, grabbing the lead through goals to Jess Good and Bree and Moody. And finally, expansion side Port Adelaide nailed their first ever win, thumping the Swans 10 goals, 8, 68 to 2. It was a fitting way for captain Erin Phillips, the most decorated player in the competition's history, to celebrate her 50th game.
In basketball, Becky Hammon became a WNBA championship coach on Monday morning, guiding her Las Vegas Aces to the WNBA title with a 78-71 Game 4 victory over the Connecticut Sun.
Can I just say, sorry, I'm jumping in
Please
here.
Please say.
No, we need to do a hand signal when we're not in real life.
The delay is quite hard, isn't it?
Woke up this morning, trying to find this everywhere. No, ESPN just didn't have it on because there's NFL games on. Great, thanks. Wasn't on SBS either. So
Game 4 of the WNBA Finals was not on television.
Yeah, in Australia.
Yeah, but that's bad.
Frustrating. Continue.
In the process, Becky Hammon became the first in WNBA history to win a title in her debut season as a head coach. That's impressive. It was the first ever WNBA championship for the Aces, and Chelsea Gray was outstanding for the team with 20 points in Game 4. She was named the most valuable player of the finals. Coach Hammon said after the game what she was most proud of was the way the Aces players trusted in each other. It was that message she kept emphasizing all season, and it proved a major factor in winning the title. Did you make that part up? Because your argument is trust wins championships.
Nope, but I definitely put it in there because it's right. It's a fact. Becky says so. So you can just stick your opinion somewhere else.
Oh, wow, aggressive. She said, they're unbelievable on the court, but they are unbelievable humans. They care about each other. It's been so much fun. They're big-time players. They love big-time moments. Oh, I'm so about that. I love it. While this is Becky's first season as a head coach, it's not her first time on the big stage. So she spent 8 seasons as an assistant to Greg Popovich, double G and Greg at the end, weird, unnecessary, in the NBA at the San Antonio Spurs. And many thought she'd be the first to break the glass ceiling to become the first woman head coach of an NBA team. It hasn't happened yet. And when the Aces came knocking, she could not turn down the chance to coach players like Gray, Wilson, and Kelsey Plum. Hammon is aware that being a female has held her back in the coaching journey, saying, sure, if my name was Brian and I played 16 years in the NBA, I would have been hired and fired a few times as an NBA coach already. That's just what it is. Isn't that so true? Also funny, why did she say the name Brian?
Brian. Brian Hammon?
Brian
Maybe
Hammond.
She should start applying for jobs as Brian.
It's not a bad idea.
With her resume, but just the name Brian.
That would be a good social experiment. I don't know why it's social, but it'd be a good experiment. There is no doubt that the NBA's loss was the WNBA's gain, and there are now thousands of Las Vegas Aces fans thankful for Becky Hammon right now.
Go the Aces. In some more basketball, late last week, President Joe Biden met with Cheryl Greiner, wife of Brittany Greiner, and reassured her that he's working to gain the WNBA star's freedom. Greiner remains in a prison in Russia after being sentenced to 9 years on drug charges. The August 4th verdict was called unacceptable, according to President Biden, and the US government continues to try and secure BG's release. The United States in late July said it had put forward a substantial offer to secure the release, and the Russian Foreign Ministry said it was engaged in quiet diplomacy with the United States about a potential prisoner swap. Cheryl Greiner thanked Biden in a statement, saying it was an honor to speak to him about the Brittany we know and love. She said, I felt every minute of the grueling 7 months without her. I look forward to the day my wife is back home. As my family and I continue on this journey, I'd like to thank the broad coalition of friends, leaders, and supporters who continue to stand with us and advocate for Brittany's swift and safe return. Let's share a unified commitment to bringing all Americans home to their families and loved ones. Together, we are BG. Rough. God, I hope they get her home soon.
What happens with a prisoner swap? Do they have to still serve out the length of their sentence regardless?
I think it's depending on the alleged crime. So obviously BG uses medicinal marijuana that's legal in America. and that was the issue. She had two hashish cases that had residue of that in her bag. So I think obviously given that that wouldn't be a crime in America, I think she'd just come home to and be free. But I'm no lawyer.
Right. Yeah, I love how I asked you that as if you knew the answer to that. Because it would make sense, right, that she could come home and it's not illegal on home soil, but I didn't know if that was a condition of a prisoner swap, that when they do come home, they still have to serve out their sentence on home soil. To be determined.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
In more basketball, the FIBA World Cup is almost here and the Aussie Opals have wound up a series of trial matches with another win. They beat Belgium 65-61 on Sunday after beating France earlier in the week 92-88. The Opals are ready for a massive World Cup on home soil and their first match is this Thursday against France. Last week, Tess Madjan was named captain of the team and the weight of expectation is not lost on her. She spoke about what it means to be part of the group, saying, "Growing up and watching the Sydney Olympics is what really inspired me to want to be an Opal. We are a sisterhood, once an Opal, always an Opal. And I think that's something that this group can really leave a mark on, is our care for each other. And hopefully that will be taken forward in all Opals groups in the future." Madjan says the players are as fit as they've ever been and at the World Cup want to showcase their trademarks of being super fierce, super feared, tough, physically relentless. Cool. I like those words.
I reckon that's a little insight into the posters on the wall in the change room, I reckon.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Madjan gets to play alongside the GOAT, Lauren Jackson, who will no doubt instill a level of quiet confidence in these Opals. And we cannot wait to see them on the court.
The podcast, I think my favorite of all time was your chat.
Yeah, that's a big call, favorite of all time.
Yeah, I just think LJ was just super open and candid about, you know, her life and career and her ups and downs. And it was just a really, really good listen.
Thank you.
What was your favorite part?
I was thinking about that. I reckon I was, because I've read her book, I know her story so well. Like I've heard her chat about Russia and all of those things in the past, but there were just different things where she talked about her anxiety as a little kid, not wanting to leave her mum's side. And she ended up being a basketballer who'd traveled the world trying to make a living. And she just had to find a way to get through it and push through panic attacks and anxiety and depression and all of these things. Like, it's just seriously impressive what she's been through and the perspective that she now carries into this opportunity. She's just so thankful for this opportunity to play basketball again. But at the same time, she's gone away. She's had two beautiful little kids and she actually just is appreciating it day by day. And she's like, it might get taken away from me at any second, but if it does, I'll be okay. It just, yeah. If you haven't listened to it, check it out, because it was a real honour to get the chance to chat to her and in that level of detail and honesty.
Yep, great chat. In triathlon, Ashley Gentle has won big in Texas. She took out the Professional Triathletes Organization US Open race in Dallas, beating a top-class international field and pocketing US 100K in the process.
Nice payday.
Nice. Gentle was eighth after the 2K swim and 80-kilometre cycle, but came home fast in the 18-kilometre run to get the victory. She broke down in tears after finishing in 3 hours, 37 minutes and 18 seconds, beating Taylor Nibbett by 1 minute and 15 seconds after the American led for much of the race. It was hot in Dallas, and Gentle emptied herself on that run leg, saying after the race, "I had to dig to the depths of my soul for that one. It is very hot. I absolutely didn't expect to run into the wind today. I was honestly feeling just horrible on the start of the bike ride, being on my own a little bit, watching the group right away. It was really discouraging, but I was just trying to keep my head in the game." It was a second win for Gentle after also taking the prize in July at the PTO Canadian Open. She's killing it.
How good. In soccer, and also in some no one watches women's sport news, my favorite kind of news, the San Diego Wave has smashed the single game attendance record for the National Women's Soccer League, the NWSL, after a sellout crowd of 32,000 was recorded for Saturday's 1-0 win over Southern California rivals Angel City FC. The game was the Wave's first to be held at the new Snapdragon Stadium. It is sadly not named after the San Diego State University team. On December 6, 2021, San Diego State announced a naming rights agreement with Qualcomm, who also owned the naming rights to the original stadium. The stadium became known as Snapdragon Stadium, named after Qualcomm's Snapdragon brand of systems on a chip.
So disappointing. I just wanted it to be, you know, Snapdragons, like the little flowers?
No.
You don't know what a Snapdragon is?
No. The San Diego Wave FC president, Jill Ellis, said, "This is a great reflection of the momentum we see in women's sports. We've sold all of our inventory. It's incredible. We should celebrate this, but we should now expect it. Big crowds for women's professional sports. Yes, I love this. The electric crowd was rewarded when 17-year-old Jaden Shaw scored the first goal in Snapdragon Stadium history on the 30-minute mark. That goal was enough to secure the win for the home team in front of their huge home crowd."
So good. And a quick little shout out here, obviously, the Female Athlete Project, focusing on amazing female athletes, but couldn't let this week go by without a quick little nod to another GOAT who announced they were stepping away from tennis. Roger Federer, 41-year-old Swiss superstar, won an amazing 20 Grand Slam titles, third most of all time for men, in his 24-year career, spent a record 237 straight weeks as the world number one.
That's a lot of weeks.
It sure is. And at 36 years old, became the oldest player to ever hold that top mark. Thank you, Roger. You are absolutely all class.
Yeah, 4.5 years.
I will miss that single-handed backhand. It was a thing of beauty.
And what I love about Roger is his humility and his humility. That's it. That's what I love about him. He's so good to watch. And just the way that he carries himself and the way he speaks. Love him.
Class.
Let's take a look at the key story.
So a bit more cycling. This is an interesting one. The French Cycling Federation have come out and defended their head-scratching decision to fly their men in business class to Australia for the World Champs, while their female competitors flew in economy class. The men's team, which includes two-time defending world champ Julien Alaphilippe, travelled up front, while the seven women riders, as well as the rest of the delegation, including male and female competitors entered in the junior events and their support staff, were all in the back of the plane.
Christophe Manin, French cycling's national technical director, told the AFP that flying the team to Australia costs a lot of money and we don't have the means to put everyone in business. He said that the federation had based its decisions on one main criterion, the ability to compete for medals. And the men had better chances, he said. For the men, we've been world champions for the last 2 years. We are really going there to win, while we are more of an outsider in the girls' competition. I actually wonder if maybe they wouldn't be such outsiders if you
believed in
provided
them
with better conditions and flew them business class like the men. Maybe then their bodies would be better prepared to compete in a world championships.
That's a very interesting concept, Chloe.
Mm-hmm.
The French team manager Thomas Voeckler, who travelled with the women's team in economy, attempted to just brush over the controversy, instead focusing on the athletes being there to represent France. When he said, "I'm concentrating on the sport and I have no energy to lose as long as the riders of the French team are proud to wear the colours of the jersey." So I think some of the jerseys came out in different stages on the conveyor belt because some had a business class tag attached to them. And then the other bags, they were last. Travelling with bikes, how much oversized luggage?
It's a lot of waiting at the oversized, isn't it?
So thoughts on this, friend?
I think probably what I said before is we always come back to this point of you have to invest and you have to water the plant to see it grow, and it's a really backwards way to look at it. I was actually looking at Kelsey Trainer is her name, who's in the US, and she does a lot in the women's sports space, and I was looking at this tweet that she has pinned. She talks about looking at it like it's a 400-meter race, and in a 400-meter race, you've got staggered starts, because if you didn't have staggered starts and everyone started at the same place, the person in the outside lane has to run a lot further than the person in the inside lane. And she was talking about it in terms of media coverage of women's sports. But that's why it's actually so important to invest in these things, because you can't just put them all in the same starting line and be like, off you go, good luck. So I think this example with the business class is put them all. If you're going to put the men in business and they're flying to the same location, put the women in business, invest, and then see what happens.
Absolutely agree. And look, I don't know how, I'm not about to comment on the financial position of French cycling, but they've just had and I know this is probably separate and Tour de France is privately owned and all that kind of stuff, but there is some serious coin in cycling. I don't understand how you can't put your seven women competitors up in business class as well.
That's a very good point.
Find a way, find an investor, find someone who is willing, like you said, to water the plant, because those plants deserve some watering and those women deserve not to be spoken about like they're just going to get swooped on by magpies.
Let's take a look at what to watch. In basketball, the FIBA World Cup starts on Thursday with the Opals facing France in their first match. Tip-off is 8:30 p.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time at Kudos Bank Arena in Homebush. All matches will be live on ESPN, which is available in Australia via Foxtel, Fetch and KO Sports. And I'll also make sure I put the link in the show notes so you can get tickets for all of the matches. Get on board.
Our AFLW match of the round. I say our here. I wrote this myself, so I'm happy for you to jump in, friend, if you've got, you know, other opinions. All opinions are equal at TFAP.
We love that.
Unless it's about trust. My match of the round, we'll go with that. I thought on Friday, which is another holiday in Melbourne, another strange one, the day off before the grand final.
Strange.
Have at it, Melbourne, four-day weekend for you guys. So there is a Friday lunchtime game, kicks off at 12:40 p.m. at the Swinburne Centre between the undefeated Western Bulldogs and the North Melbourne Kangas. I think that's some excellent lunchtime viewing for everyone before the big AFL granny on Saturday. You can watch live on the Seven Network and Foxtel.
It's finals time in the NRLW and both games will be played at Suncorp Stadium on Sunday. Second place Knights faced off against the third place Dragons at 2:05 p.m., followed by first place Roosters versus fourth placed Eels at 3:50 p.m. Both matches are live on the Nine Network and Foxtel.
In cycling, the 2022 UCI Road World Champs continue this week, and a highlight will be the Women's Elite Road Race this Saturday at 12 p.m. All that action takes place on the streets of Wollongong and live on Stan Sport.
In a slightly different what to watch, there's an amazing doco currently showing on SBS called Sidelined: Women in Basketball. The four-part series follows the Deakin Melbourne Boomers as they take their fight beyond the basketball court to overcome gender inequality, lower pay, balancing a sporting career with other work, racial discrimination, and the constant pressure to justify their existence as female athletes in a sporting and societal landscape dominated by men. How's that sentence?
So good. Look, I may have ripped it straight off the SBS page, but it was everything. It's all we need to know and it's perfect.
Exactly. So you can catch up on episode one on SBS On Demand now, and you can watch episode two live on Sunday at 4:40 p.m. on SBS Viceland. It's some perfect additional World Cup viewing while you're in your basketball theme. And that's the wrap.
See you next week, friend.
We did pretty well with awkward online delays, but I reckon we nailed it. And you were better than I thought. Well done.
Oh, thanks. That was not a backhanded compliment at all.
Not at all. Don't forget, get your tickets to the Basketball World Cup, subscribe to the podcast, check out the newsletter, merchandise, everything more on our socials at the Female Athlete Project. We'll see you there and we'll see you in your ears next Tuesday.
In your ears. Get around it.
Bye.